I want to dig into discipleship now, and I want to speak to it in the context of the pandemic of loneliness that we're seeing across Europe and especially in the younger generation. One in four adults in the UK say they experience loneliness regularly. Levels are higher among young people, where 61% of those aged 18 to 25 reported feeling lonely frequently or almost all the time, or all of the time. And that's a combination of a UK research and an American one. But it's the reality across our continent and generation. And I want to show a video here, a short video of a YouTuber, a non-Christian YouTuber, who lives in London. And she shares her experience of loneliness. And I think it will help us to dig a bit deeper into that sense in our culture and how we can respond to it.
I don't have a definition for what's happening with me. The only thing I'm sure of is that I've always known that something was not quite right. My life wasn't exactly difficult growing up, but I never really felt understood. I naively thought that maybe if I have a bit of patience, things will change. So here we are. Years later, I live in a city surrounded by countless individuals, and yet I have no one to actually talk to. Sometimes I find myself in a room full of faces, feeling more alone than in my own bed at midnight. The people are there, but they are little more than bags of flesh and bones, unable to offer a meaningful connection. So when I finally find the courage to utter a few words, no one is there to really listen. They all just wait for their turn to speak. Sometimes I walk down the streets in the evenings, greedily looking into cozy, dimly lit living rooms. It feels as though every living soul is behind a glass wall. It's like I'm looking at humanity from the outside, unable to participate. But do I actually care for being a part of their world? It's the paradox of wanting to be alone out of comfort and habit, but feeling desperately lonely at the same time. Every single time I come home after a long day, I turn off the do not disturb mode on my phone, just to see no notifications, no texts, nothing. So I curl up in bed, and the moment my cheek touches the pillow, my mind just drops off a cliff. Suddenly, tears are pouring for no apparent reason, and there's no way of stopping them. I can only wait for it to pass. When I was younger, I thought I'd be at my happiest right now. Instead, I can't help but feel that I've been cheated out of life. Every day, I'm wasting precious time. Every year goes by and nothing changes. Each Christmas reminds me that I'm in the same spot I was 12 months ago. Sure, entire 2020 has been a dreadful year, but the holidays served as a not-so-subtle reminder of all the lost connections. Throughout the months, I felt more isolated each day, as my only friends started their own never-to-be-alone-again journeys with their loved ones. It felt like I was being left behind. It felt like everyone silently faded from my life. The group chats that used to be popping suddenly went quiet. You don't grasp the bleakness of your situation until you have something you desperately want to share, but no one to tell it to. I know that everyone's got it tough these days, I know. But whether it's social distancing or no social distancing, it doesn't change a thing. I felt the same way before this started, and I will feel the same way after it ends. So when things get back to normal for everyone else, I still won't have anyone to look forward to seeing. This is the real epidemic. The epidemic of loneliness. And we're not exactly trying to fix it. My wish is for 2021. I want a hug. And just once, I want someone to be afraid of.
sorry, it cuts a little bit early, but she says to be afraid of losing me. So the desire to have somebody who would be there for her and would miss her. It's a powerful video, and it really touches deeply on that sense of loneliness that many people experience today. Of course, not everybody might experience it at the level she describes here, but there is, as we know, this pandemic of mental health issues and of loneliness and of depression across Europe, in many countries and many cities, and often it's the bigger cities that it's even more prevalent. You know, we prayed for London, to have something in London for many years. It's such a crazy city, multicultural, and a lot of what Kat, the YouTuber, describes here, where she lives in London. And it was amazing. Last year, we were able to start a pioneer team in central London at King's Cross, in partnership with a number of different local churches, including King's Cross Baptist Church and in a few other churches as well. And they started doing what I shared with you guys before, just going out and meeting people, organizing events in cafes, doing street evangelism, putting on concerts, starting Bible studies, starting a community house. And the response was incredible. And they've seen people come to faith, and even in the few months that they were there, and they've decided to stay. So they're now going to be a long-term team in London that I'm excited about to respond to some of this. But I wanted to look more deeply into this. And, you know, here are a few quotes from that video that really caught my attention. No one's able to offer a meaningful connection. You remember I said in the first talk about that desire to belong, to connect somehow, and that people find it hard to do that today. She says, no one listens. They just wait for their turn to speak. Again, in evangelism, we talked about the need to listen to people, to ask good questions, to really be there for people and to hear their views, their beliefs, their feelings. It's a powerful tool to engage with people today. I feel unable to participate, wanting to be alone out of comfort and habit, but feeling desperately lonely. That one's really interesting for me because that one shows how we are victims of our own culture and our own way of living and doing things. So we want independence and individuality. We want the comfort of staying in our homes and just working from home and watching Netflix. And then we suddenly find ourselves desperately lonely. And that's how a lot of people have found themselves at this point. There are so many issues there that in the culture that lead to that. Those lies I talked about before play into this. You know, we have this personal fulfillment and freedom as our idol. That's what's considered most important, but it leaves us in a crisis of identity and a crisis of relationship. I don't know who I am, if I have any purpose, and I don't know how to belong or how to connect with people. And that's why my answer is, again, those three points of go to people, speak truth, the truth of the gospel of Jesus to them, and build discipleship relationships. And that's what I'm going to talk about now. And somebody asked to show the discipleship slide again. Well, this whole piece will cover those points from the discipleship slide. Discipleship is a rebellion against that idol of self. It goes against the tide. It goes against the lies of this culture. It brings identity and belonging and unparalleled community. What we have in what Jesus offers in knowing the one who designed and created us is unique in society today. It gives us identity and belonging. And the church established by Jesus, based on the love that he taught of forgiving 70 times seven, of loving your neighbor as you love yourself, is unique. There is nothing like it in society or in history. It cannot be compared to anything else when it's done right and well and based on the character of Jesus. And that's what you and I have, this unique response to a very real pandemic of loneliness and challenge that is out there. So I want to encourage you that engaging with people and inviting them into your life and walking with them and showing them the way of Jesus is incredibly needed today, and it is powerful to respond. Well, how do we do this? What is discipleship? What should it look like? Well, I don't think we have to invent a lot of anything new. We can look to Jesus's ministry. Jesus taught people who didn't fit the religious demographic. In other words, Jesus didn't wait for people to come to his church. You know, he went out to people. He was in the marketplaces by the lake in people's homes. He taught the prostitutes and the tax collectors and the sinners. He was called a glutton and a drunkard because he hung out with them. And that's what we need today. And we need to teach our young people to do this, to connect with the world around them, with their peers, and to be there and to see discipleship as something we all do in our relationships and in our influence with those who are not part of the church yet. Jesus taught in community. He invited people into his circle, his life, and he taught outside of religious places. So a lot of what I've been sharing and describing here, I don't see as new. I see it as things that Jesus did. I also see it in Paul's ministry. Paul says in 1 Thessalonians, because our gospel came to you not simply with words, but also with power, with the Holy Spirit and deep conviction. You know how we lived among you for your sake. Paul did exactly that. We read it throughout Acts, and we know that the churches that received the epistles, we see their stories in Acts. And most of the time, if not all the time, it was Paul going and living among them and spending time with them and going to them. He says, because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Paul saw discipleship as a relationship, as a sharing of life. He said, you became imitators of us and of the Lord, for you welcomed the message in the midst of severe suffering with the joy given by the Holy Spirit. And so you became a model to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. And what's amazing about that point is that when we do discipleship this way, where we go to people and show them what it looks like to follow Jesus in their own context, in their own world and lives, then it multiplies. They become the ones to disciple others. So with all that in mind, here's a definition that we use in our mission for discipleship. We say a discipleship relationship is sharing life with someone, not expecting them to come to us, but going to where they are and intentionally showing them what it means to follow Jesus in their context. It means making prayer and the Bible accessible and understandable and helping them get connected with a local church community. There's a few different points in that I want to unpack. We believe that discipleship doesn't start the day someone commits to a local church, but it's the moment they meet you, a follower of Jesus. So maybe I'm doing an evangelistic event in my church and I meet somebody new, or I'm doing some street evangelism, or I'm going to my university campus and finding ways of engaging with people, or I'm doing a concert in a festival. I meet somebody new. I meet the guy from the other band. Discipleship has begun. My life, my influence in that person's life is crucial. It might be the only bridge or link they have. And so I must stay with them. I must walk with them and stay connected, pursue that relationship, invite them into my life so that they have a chance to see what it looks like to follow Jesus today. They need it demonstrated. It's not a program that happens once a week, but a life-on-life relationship. Now, we're not against programs. You will have seen we run Bible studies. We do meetings. But it's got to be more than that. It has to be really an inviting somebody into my life. Discipleship relationship happens in the context people come from. It is a responsibility of every believer, and it should lead to multiplication. Now, the way I'm describing discipleship, I hope it comes across as well, that this is, it only happens if it's deeply connected to evangelism. And we've often separated those things. And we see discipleship as, oh, that happens when somebody comes to my church and they commit, and then they'll go to the group for the new believers or the baptism preparation or whatever the format is in your church. We limit it to that. The thing is, we won't get to disciple many people if we're not going out and meeting them and sharing the gospel. And when we go out and share the gospel with them, they usually won't come to our church the next Sunday. So this is bridging that gap. This is discipleship in their context. Another passage that I find helpful in thinking about this, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul talks about becoming all things to all people. He says, you know, I'll become a Jew for the Jews or a Gentile for the Gentiles, of one who is not under the law for those who are not under the law. And why does he talk like that? Sometimes we've interpreted that like, oh, you know, anything goes. You can do whatever you want to reach people. But really, I think what Paul is describing there is a sacrificial love where he's willing to let go of his own rights to connect with the people God has called him to be where they are, and to show them what it looks like to follow Jesus. He wanted to show a Jewish person what it looked like for a Jewish person to follow Jesus. And in the same way, he wanted to show a Gentile, a Greek person, what it looked like to follow Jesus being a Greek person in, you know, in Athens or in Corinth. And he would show them, he would demonstrate. We need to do that today. How can we show the designers in New York, the bankers in London, the you know, the people around us in our European cities, what it looks like to follow Jesus? They need to see it up close in our own lives, and it can't be just in the church. So that's why it's so important to invite people into my home and family, into my life, and that's why it's important that we're present publicly in those places. I'll give one more example of that before we go into questions. We started a work in São Paulo, Brazil, many years ago, my wife and I, and we developed the work of Steigerim São Paulo and had a team there. And one of the things we did, I'm not very creative, I always come up with the same ideas. I had a band there, and we were doing concerts in clubs around the city. And one particular band we played with, they responded to the message, and the leader of the band came over to me and he said, "I like your message. It's powerful. I want to preach this message too." And I thought, great, what church are you from? You know, and he said, "Well, I'm not from a church. I don't really go to church. I don't know much about this, but I liked the message you gave about Jesus, and I would like to preach it too." And I said, "Well, if you want to talk about Jesus, you have to meet him first, and you have to find out more about him." And he said, "Well, that's great. Could you come to our band practice next week and tell us more?" Which is what every missionary wants to hear, right? So I got on a bus the next week and went to their band practice. They were practicing in a small room. They had some friends watching, and they were rocking out as if they were playing to 1,000 people. And when he finished, he handed the microphone to me and said, "Now preach." And I wasn't really prepared for that. So I improvised and explained what it meant to follow Jesus. And he said, "That was good. Come back next week." So I started going back every week to their band practice, and I started taking the Gospel of Luke or the Gospel of John with me just as a separate booklet and handing them out and saying, "Let's read and let's talk about this." And they gradually they invited more friends, and we moved to the bar next door because there wasn't room. And we'd confuse the security guards in the bar because we'd walk in with 15 to 20 people and sit around a table and hand out Bibles and start reading and talking about what it said. But again, like I told you guys about the team in Kyiv, it's amazing to connect with people who haven't read it before and have these conversations. So that led to, after a few months of reading the Bible together, I said, "Who here wants to get baptized?" And seven of the guys put their hands in the air, said, "Yeah, I want to be baptized." And I said, "Well, if you want to be baptized, you have to come to my church." And so for some of them, the first time they actually walked into the church was for the day of their baptism. That's when they felt ready. And the baptism was a beautiful welcoming into that community of faith. And they very quickly became part of the church, not because they liked the style of music of the worship or the style of the meeting or whatever. They went there because they had become authentic followers of Jesus, and they wanted to serve and be part of the bigger picture of what God was doing and be part of the community of faith. And I think that's a key thing. We often think, well, we just focus on this aesthetics, the superficial of how to draw young people, and we think that'll convince them. But a change of heart has to happen. They have to authentically meet Jesus, and then they won't care too much about whether the style of music and the worship is theirs or not. They'll get it. And so that's why a lot of the work needs to happen out there where they are. And getting to the point of how it relates to this, this band started preaching in all of their concerts, and they were better than my band. So they preached to many more people than we ever did. And that leader of that band now leads our work, or part of our work, in São Paulo, Brazil right now. He did our Steiger Mission School that is in Germany, and he became a frontline missionary and does the work today in a way better than we ever could. And so it multiplies. But that happened because he learned how to be a follower of Jesus in his context. He learned how to be a hardcore rock band in São Paulo who follows Jesus and preaches Jesus and is authentically following him in his context. And then he multiplied in that context. And we need to do this in each of our scenes and cultural contexts of our cities. How can we go and boldly share Jesus and walk with people and show them what it looks like to follow Jesus in their context so that they become the frontline agents to reach people today. This is really crucial for young people because they will be, as I've said, the best agents to reach this generation. It's peer-to-peer evangelism and discipleship that will reach secular culture today. So we need to give them the chance and we need to push them out. We need to send them out, encourage them. We go out with them. We need to support them and give them the chance and the time to go out and meet people in that way.